we are going to dedicate this learning to the Rasha, to the wicked son. Okay? We are going to learn the approach of Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach, as that is the theme of the Shir in general, and Bezrat Hashem add in Rabbi Jonathan Sachs's beautiful approach to this. And if we have a little time, we'll even throw in Reclaimus Kalman. Oh, an advertisement. Rabbeinish and the Eish Kodesh thoughts. But perhaps just as importantly, maybe more importantly, we all have insights and questions, thoughts, comments. Of course, that's always welcome. Okay? So that's the plan. Let's begin. Bezrat Hashem. So the Shaila is Yadua. What's the deal with the Haggadah's response to the wicked son? Okay? So let's read it inside before we jump to any conclusions. There are four children, say the rabbis. Okay? Four children. Now, of course, in the Torah itself, we don't find these four children. Rather, we have four different times that the question is asked of the child. He's going to ask you this question. And so the rabbis got very, very creative. And they said, really, the reason there's four different questions is because it's four different types of children. Four different types of children. And one of the one probably that gets the most press is the Rasha, is the wicked child. Okay? It's interesting to note that in the Yerushalmi, you see, the Seder, the Haggadah we have is like the end of the process. In the Yerushalmi, it doesn't have four questions. It has the question of the Rasha. That's the only question. So apparently the Rasha's question is the ikker, the most fundamental. His question and our response to the Rasha, at least from the Yerushalmi's perspective, is the most fundamental. Yeah, you're going to see that there are definitely new interpretations as to what the Rasha means. So yeah, we'll get there. But on a simple level, we're starting in a very just forget everything you've ever heard before. On a simple level, whenever else we use the word Rasha, it usually means wicked. So I think it would be honest for me to translate it as wicked. But we'll have to see. That's a bit strange, because what does that mean? Is the Jewish child sitting at the Pesach Seder ever really wicked? Can we ever really relate to him as wicked? Right. Correct. Good point. Okay. But the Pastis, okay, the Rasha, however we translate it, he has the following question. So here we go. Okay. Rasha, mahu omer, what does the wicked child say? Ma avoda azot lachem. What is this work for you? Like, what is this work? Like, what is this? What's this all about? Okay? Ma avoda azot lachem. So, lachem velo lo. The rabbis say, to you, but not for him. In other words, he doesn't relate to it as his avodah. He says it's your avodah. He's disconnecting himself from the klal. Since he's considering himself different than everybody else, kafra be'ikr. So he has, how do we translate that? He's gone against the principal idea, one of the principal ideas of the Torah. He's excluding himself from klal Yisrael, and therefore he's out. So what should our response do? So you should sharpen his teeth. Makechin. We'll have to figure out what does hake exactly mean. Sharpen his teeth. Va'amarlo. And tell him. The pasuk says, because of this, Hashem did this for me. Leave lo. You tell him, you know what? The dad says, you give him a little like this. It's for me and not you, not for him. He's out. If you would have been there, you would have never made it out. In other words, remember the Chamushim? Remember the 4/5 that never made it out of Egypt? You would have been one of those. You wouldn't have survived, says the Papa to the wicked son. And we move on to the top. Sounds great. Okay, so there is some obvious questions. There's some obvious strange things about this response to the Rasha. Let's just throw it out there. What approach is that? How are we going to bring this kid back to Yiddishkeit if we're, you know, sharpening his teeth and giving him mussar and like really intense mussar? You would have never gotten out of there. And like, that just seems like a silly more than silly, like a wrong educational method. And add to it, it's not just wrong, but like, why are the rabbis trying to teach us as the educators of our children? Why? What kind of message are they giving us by telling us knock out his teeth or sharpen his teeth? It just doesn't seem to vibe certainly with us moderns. But I don't really ever see the value of being makeh et shinav. I'll regul, you know, at first glance. L'choida. Okay, good. That's a good question. Any other questions before we start suggesting answers? Okay, we're happy. So before we see what the Rebbes say, what do you guys say? What, I'm sure we've heard this answer before. Give me this question before. What, or even if you haven't heard the question, why, what do you think that the Seder is trying to, the Baal Haggadah is trying to convey to us by this harsh response to the Rasha? What do you all think?
I don't even get along. No, you have no information. Whenever there's a message, it makes that noise.
What do you guys think? Any thoughts? Why are the rabbis, it could be we don't know. It could be that you like my question. That's okay. You don't have to always have an answer. It's good to have questions. But maybe some of you guys have a suggestion as to what's the educational idea that the rabbis are trying to convey.
Well, you said the Yerushalmi has, this is the only question?
This is the one question in the Yerushalmi.
So how come?
At least one.
Probably, or the Ashkenazim, what do you want to call it?
So the Yerushalmi is earlier text, and apparently it evolved. It evolved into four different questions. The rabbis and the Babli later came in. Said actually it's more correct to break it down into four different children. But we're focusing on the Rosh. Okay. Yes. What's your name? Go for it. Approach is that there is such a thing as din, you know? Not everything's love and candies and rachamim and Rav Shlomo. You know, maybe the rabbis are telling us that sometimes you got to shake them up, you got to be strong, and we're also concerned about the other brothers. Because he's not the only guy sitting at the table. What about the Tam? What kind of hashpa'a is the Rasha going to have on the Tam? So for the sake of the rest of the children, we have to put him in his place. It's a little bit like, sometimes when you see these debates on TV between this politician or that politician, so they're not really talking to each other. They're talking to the audience, right? Because they don't really care about convincing this one guy who's on the other side of the spectrum. We're talking to everybody else. So similarly here, I, the father, am worried about the rest of Am Yisrael who are listening in, and maybe that's one approach as to what the idea is about being so harsh to this Russia. Okay, good. Okay, now I want to present one answer, which I really liked from Rabbi Sachs. Let's start with this, actually. Rabbi Sachs contextualizes the Haggadah a little bit. What Rabbi Sachs finds, I'm not going to read it inside, you'll forgive me, but Rabbi Sachs finds that this text of the four children was originally authored by two rabbis, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, okay, and Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, okay? They are the ones who are quoted to be the source of this question, the original Rasha's question. Now, let's do a little history, okay? What time period did Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rav Yishmael live in? The same time period, essentially, as Rabbi Akiva, which we know as the Roman time period. The time that the Jews were not in charge. We weren't in charge of the culture. In fact, the Jews were rebelling against the Romans. Okay? We didn't get along very well. We also happen to know, just by studying many different Talmudic texts, that there were a lot of Jews who were going off the path during this time period. Okay? Not just, not keeping a mitzvah here or there. No, they were saying, we're not Jewish. We are completely not, we're disassociating ourselves with our Jewish heritage because there was a lot of practical benefits as to not being a Jew, right? The Romans wouldn't want to kill you and you could move up the chains. The truth is, this wasn't only during this time period. There's been many different time periods in our history when, sadly enough, Jews have wanted to go and just say, I'm not Jewish, right? Completely assimilate, but for like personal gain reasons, right? During the Spanish Inquisition, course, the Barbanel writes that many Jews were completely jumping off during the Greek, right, and Jewish
30 days before Pesach,
going off. Now, therefore, when the Baal Haggadah is writing this text, it's teaching them, it's speaking in that generation, saying these people who are going off the path and not doing a sin here or there, but saying we're not Jewish, we don't want anything to do with it, they're drawing the red line and saying that's it. You know what I'm saying? That's too much. Not saying he's not Jewish, but we're going to sharpen him. We're going to be tough. We're going to be intense. We're going to say, you want, okay, there are red lines here, and to disconnect yourself, to not be part of Klal Yisrael, that's wrong, and that's why the Haggadah gives such a harsh response. Okay, and we can, of course, apply it to our time periods, to people who want to completely disconnect themselves with their Judaism. You know, there's a famous, I don't want to speak Lashon Hara, but there was a famous chess master, and they put him into the book as being Jewish. And he wrote to the encyclopedia, whatever, I'm not Jewish, I have nothing to do with my Judaism, how dare you use me and try to make the Jews look better. He didn't have anything to do with Judaism, because that way, you know, he didn't want to connect. And unfortunately, during the time period we're living in, that's happening, it happens.
And
it's happening a lot.
He happened to be Jewish?
He was Jewish, his mother was Jewish, his name's super Jewish. It's not really Lashon Hara for me to say him, but... Yes, exactly. I just don't want to say anything bad. So anyways, the point is that that's the historical perspective. But okay, you know, that's one angle as to how to understand this, but we want to take it and make it more relevant to our generation. We want to bring it to our generation. So that's what good educators do. They take it and they talk to their populace, to their chevra, and they want to apply it to the people they're talking about. So let's begin with Rav Shlomo. Okay, where's my Rav Shlomo Sefer? Tershu le'agid lachem gam Torah shel Belz al Aben Rasha. So let's start with a fun Torah, a Belzer Torah. I think it's not so famous. I think it's a beautiful Torah. A Belzer Torah, a Torah that Rav Shlomo was a master of all the Hasidic Rebbes. So he's quoting the Belzer Rebbe. Ulai ze lo omek shel izbitze aval gam ze amok. We're going to talk about izbitz, but it's a very deep Torah. The Mila Rasha Yeshalosh Otiyot. There's three letters in the word Rasha, right? Resh, Shan, Shin, Ayin. Shtei Otiyot Chitzonot and Ra. And what are the external letters in Rasha? Resh and Ayin. Okay? See where he's going here? So on the external level, this Rasha is Ra. He's bad. But then he's got the Shin. Okay? Now, what does a shin have? It has three points. Okay? Three tsinorot. Three pipes.
Crowns.
Three pipes that are coming from above, and they're moving into one place. Himavatet. So what does that three different aspects of the shin remind us of?
Left, right, and center.
That's good. I like that. But he's going to say something different. He's going to say Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He's going to say the shin is connecting us to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The famim yudi.
That's the same as left, right, and center, because Yaakov was
Tiferes and Chesed and Gvura. Yafet. Aryeh
was right.
Aryeh was right. Aba b'fnim adayin kasher l'Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. On the external level, this yid looks like he's disconnected, but on an internal level, he's mamish connected to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Okay? So what do we got to do with this yid? Haked shinav. You got to sharpen his shins. Not shinav, like teeth. You got to sharpen the shin and klomer takev taret the shin at the moment. Awaken within him the shin. You got to find a way to awaken the inner connection to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Okay? I don't know. Give him a lachaim. Give him a hug. Give him a good for bringing. Given at the Seder, you know, somehow sing the Hisha Amda, find a way to awaken his inner shin. On an external level, he's disconnected, but on an internal level, his mom's connected. Zohi Torah Gevaldik. Wow, Gevaldik Torah. What an amazing Torah. Okay, so that's what the Belzer Torah.
We have a
That's what the Balzer Rebbe says. Okay. Completely Kielu in the world, everyone's calling them Rushas. But Rav Shlomo thinks they're tzaddikim. Rav Shlomo thinks he wants to bring them closer. And I think that's something that definitely we can relate to a lot more easily. Yeah. Shlomo continues in a different Maimar. He says like this. But why Shinav? Okay, so we heard the Belzer Torah, but on a simple level, Shinav means teeth, right? Maze Shinayim. What's teeth? Hashinayim tochanot lo asot et amachal kach shu ye ra'ui likul ayidei hakeba. Teeth, you take this bar. Now, if I try to eat this quicker, and I just eat it straight up without my teeth, right? If I give it to my baby, he doesn't have so many teeth right now. I just give Alicia straight up, it's not going to be good, okay? Because you can't just eat it straight up. You need to break it down. How do you break down the Torah? Through teeth. The teeth symbolizes breaking down that which is hard. Okay? So he's saying like this. Rak idea shinayim yochol yisapek to b'gufin. Through breaking it down, then you can
digest it.
Anachnu remember Russia. We're saying in Russia, ha'imat la'asta ipam yirishkai. Russia. Have you ever really chewed on Judaism? Have you really tried to break it down? Right? Ha'im la'asta pam et haTorah? Have you really ever tasted the Torah? Ha'im arad pam et haTorah lelibech? Have you brought it down to your heart? Da'alecha, imayta usek b'orida the Torah lelibech. Holy brother, if you just really try to break this Torah down and bring it to your heart, ha'itam argish kirvat alakim, you would feel the closeness of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Right? I mean, if you look at it, you just open up the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and you're a college professor. You read this law and that law and this law and that law, you're just going to think it's nuts. It's like, this is wacky. What is all this stuff? Or forget about it. You open up the Bible, you open up the Torah, not the story parts, but the law parts. Like, you're like, what's going on? You know, this is like, how do I connect to this at all? But Rosh Hashanah was saying, but if you break it down, you work hard, you ask a question, you look at the Mefarshim, you ask Hashem, you work to get, to make the Torah meaningful, so then that's going to, if you work hard on it, guarantee that you're going to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, okay, I'm skipping ahead. I need to go backwards. I probably should have said this earlier. So, according to Izbich, and Shlomo would often quote the Meshiloch. He would say when he wanted to go deeper, he would quote Rabbi Nachman and the Meshiloch. So, according to Izbich, the Russia is actually not just not so bad. He's the highest son. Not on an action level, but on a soul level, the Russia has the highest soul. Crazy, right? Now, I wouldn't have the chutzpah to say this, okay? Don't quote this at your Seder that Rav Kalman told you this. You'll get me in trouble, okay? But the Izbich, the Meshi Loach says, on a neshama level, the Russia has the highest soul.
Because he could become a Baal
Tshuva. Exactly, because he doesn't accept the simple Yiddishkeit that the tzaddik accepts. The chacham, he says, okay, beautiful, Torah, mitzvahs. I love it. I love learning. I love davening. I buy in. Gaval. But the Russia wants to go deeper. He wants to have a much deeper relationship with the Kaddosh Baruch Hu. And he doesn't accept Yiddishkeit on an external, superficial level. And therefore, when he gets exposed to fake Judaism, the Torah, which is just on the outside, but not on the inside, he can't accept it, and he runs away, and it gets him angry. It's like, that's Judaism? This, you know, you pretend, you go through the motions, but you don't really internalize it? And that's what's eating up the Russia, according to the Meshi Loach. He does, Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. Everybody always skips to the answer of the Abba, but what about the question? What does it mean, Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem? What is this work you're doing? You're going, and you're putting on tefillah, and you're going to Shacharis, and then Mincha, and then Marv, and then Kosher, and then Chometz. It's like, it's a lot. It's so much. I just want to, you know, go meditate a little bit, sing a little bit, you know, go to the soup kitchen. What's all this stuff? Why are you making me do all this stuff? Says the Izbich. Ma avodah hazot lachem. That's Rav Shlomo's explanation of the Izbich's explanation of the Russia. And so we're answering him, holy brother, you're so holy. You're so beautiful. What a gorgeous question. But the only thing is, you got to use your teeth. You got to use your teeth. And again, what's the teeth in Rosh Lomo's perspective, what is the teeth there to do?
Break it down.
Break it down. Okay, you got to break it down. And that's by the way, that's what we try to do in our learning every morning. We don't just like run through Rashi's explanation. First, we ask the question, try to feel the question. We try to come up with our own answer. And only then do we go into to Rashi. Because when you break it down and try to put your own self into whatever sugya you're learning, it doesn't really matter what, then that allows it to become much more meaningful, much more powerful. So that's answer, I don't know, two, three, wherever we're holding, for the Rasha. Another way of looking at this whole situation. What was amazing is that I found this board both in Rav Shlomo and in Rav Jonathan Sacks, which I thought was kind of cool because I never heard it before. And it's interesting because both of them are, you know, doing Kiruv, essentially. They're trying to bring Yidden back closer to Hashem. But they have such a different path. Obviously, Rav Shlomo is Hasidic and emotional and that derech. And Rav Jonathan Sacks is, you know, intellectual and philosophical. And he's reaching that crowd. But it's cool. They really have the same goal. And they ended up saying very similar things in their Haggadahs. So let's start with Rav Sacks. We'll go back to Rav Shlomo in a moment. Okay? So Rav Sacks says like this. Let me read it inside. Because I think he said it's so beautiful. So first of all, what is this phrase, hakeh et shinab? Where did the rabbis come up with this phrase, hakeh et shinab? I mean, it seems like a weird phrase. Like, where did they get that? So it turns out, do a little Bar Ilan search, a little Google search, and you go into Yirmiyahu, Chaf Aleph, Lamed Aleph Chaf Ches, and the pasuk says like this: the fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. The father ate the sour grapes, right over there, and they're sour, and somehow the child, his teeth get set on edge. Hakeh, his teeth are set on edge. So in other words, there's some sort of interesting relationship that the father does something wrong and it messes with the kids and it sets him off. So the sages were hinting at something profound. I'm not going to do the British accent. I'm just going to read it. Sorry. Children do not rebel of their own accord. The parent of a rebellious child should ask himself, did I do something to cause it? Was it my sour grapes that set my child's teeth on edge? Taking this as a key to the whole passage, I suggest the following reinterpretation. One caveat, obviously not all the time. Sometimes the father did a great job and it's just that his son went off because that's his tikkun. Not always the father or the mother's fault that the child goes off. Absolutely. I mean, look at Avram Avinu and Yishmael. So no one's blaming Avram Avinu. Sometimes that's just their mission. But sometimes it is a little bit, not the fault, but the consequence of the father.
The mother's fault.
Or the mother. No, never the mother's. But let's read his beautiful reading. What is a child whom others see as wicked, the adolescent, the rebel, the breakaway, really signaling by his contact? We know what he says. What is the question? Beneath the words, the inarticulate cry. Father, mother, what does Judaism mean to you? You sent me to Hebrew school. You gave me a bar mitzvah. You hired teachers for me. I know what Judaism is supposed to mean. I listened to the lessons. I read the books. But all this time I was growing up, you sent me mixed messages. When I neglected my secular education, you were angry. But when I missed Hebrew lessons, you never seemed to mind. I learned about the laws of Jewish life, but you did not seem to observe them. Or if you did, you did those selectively. You said Judaism mattered, but what you did seemed to show that it did not matter very much. At my bar mitzvah, you were more concerned about the catering than about how much I understood of the words I said in synagogue. As I grew older, you seemed more interested in which college I went to and what career I pursued than whether I was continuing to study and practice Judaism. You wanted me to marry a Jewish girl, but you never gave me a real reason why. I know what Judaism is supposed to mean to me, but you are my parents. I am Jewish only because you are. So I ask you from the depth of my soul, What does Judaism mean to you? Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. You get it? So Rav Sacks is interpreting that, yeah, the son goes off. He went off. His teeth are off. But you know why his teeth went off? Because you weren't living it. You have to love Judaism in order to give it over to your children. If you don't love it, they're gonna pick it up. They're gonna feel, they're gonna sense that it's just external, and they're gonna have a very hard time really connecting it. So by using that interesting phraseology of hakechinav, the rabbis are actually kind of blaming the parents for their kids going off. Shinav. Now, what's the first thing that I associate when I hear the word shinav? Vishinantam levanecha. Right, the obligation to teach it to your children. So maybe again, the rabbis are using this language of hakeh chinav. Maybe what they're trying to say is you gotta set these guys' teeth straight so that he can give it over to his kids. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because it's amazing. Every day we don't just daven for us to love learning Torah. We say tzeteinu, tzeteinu. Every day we're davening for our great grandkids to love Torah. But because the only way their great grandkids are gonna love Torah is if we really come to love Torah.
By example,
by really loving it ourselves. And so we're being makehetish etchinav, we're straining his teeth out so that he can give it over to his children. That was and certainly here in Eretz Yisrael, it's a lot easier to do that. Okay, so that's Rav Sack's perspective. Now, Rav Shlomo says something similar, but he reads it into the Seder himself a little bit creatively. So, you know, I'll just read it. We originally says Rasha Ma Omer Ma Avodah Zot Lachem. What is this? Lachem Lolo, for you and for you. No. Lefishot Yatzma Min Haklal. And since he took himself out, you kick him out. Okay. That's how we read it. We say we kick this Rasha out. But I'm gonna read it inside. 1 second. Afatak Eshanav. Why, if he would have not been there in like talking about him, he's talking with his son. If you're making him sharpen your teeth, but then when you talk to him, we're not talking anymore to the son, we're saying to the dad. Hey, Dad, if you would have been in Egypt, you would not have been redeemed. We turn from the son. We say, you know, Dad, you don't deserve to be redeemed. Why? The whole reason we left Egypt is for your children. The whole reason we left Egypt is so that there can be yidden for all the generations. And if your son's turning a Rasha, it must be you're not treating him properly. He's searching for something so deep. And apparently you're not teaching it to him in the deepest possible way. And so you're not part of the klal anymore. Okay, you're not part of the klal. And so we say if the son's having shilas, then you gotta rethink your educational methodology. So a little bit very similar to what Rabbi Isaac said, just reading it into the verse itself. I'd say a radical new reading that we're not kicking the son out, we're kicking the dad out because he wasn't doing a proper educational job. Okay? Cool. There's no such thing as losing connection with your son. And I mean, that's how we want Kadosh Baruch Hu to relate to us. Right? Like Rabbi Meir says, we're still children of Hashem. Even if we're sinners, we're still the children of Kadosh Baruch Hu. So yes, we make mistakes, but we're still the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So hopefully in that way Hashem will relate to us. And that's certainly, I think, the hadracha that I've heard. I think that certainly Rav Shlomo is on that pathway. And I think also the Lubavitcher Rebbe says things of a similar note. So I think there's a lot of rabbis who would not say cast him out just because he's not yet. But keep loving him, and we try our best, you know, Bezrat Hashem. But in fact, I'm right now dealing with the situation. Not me, thank God. At least he's good. But one of my students is dealing with a situation where, whatever, that exact situation. And that's hadracha on a practical level that I think most rabbis will give. Just keep loving them, supporting them, and showing them that there's always a path back. And as Lubavitcher Rebbe says so beautifully, we're talking about the four children now, But everyone knows that there's also a fifth child. And who's the fifth child? The one who didn't show up to the Seder. Okay? At least this Russia, he came. At the end of the day, he's still talking to you. Okay? He's still asking the questions. Maybe he's asking with a little resentment. Maybe he's not asking really. He's just trying to make a point. But at least he showed up. At least he wants a relationship. So we gotta bring him in to the best of our ability. You know, because interesting, at least unfortunately in America, how many Jews are actually going to a Seder anymore? You know, the percentages are getting lower and lower. The fifth child's getting lower and lower. So if someone bothers to come and he's even asking the question, we have to search for the pintle yid of why he's really asking the question and do our best to bring him back. The Eish Kodesh, the Rebbe Mipiezhnetza, was actually one of the inspirations for Rav Shlomo himself. And he also has my name. He's Rav Kleinimus Kalman. And he was the Rebbe in the Warsaw Ghetto. So if you know the history, there's a lot of people who were going off the derech in Poland. And certainly in the Warsaw Ghetto, when the Nazis are trying to, you know, kill everyone, there were probably a lot of people who had a lot of faith issues. So he was like the pillar of chizuk, of strength. And he was really ahead of his time. And so Rav Shlomo found him and looked upon him and based a lot of his theology on the Eish Kodesh. In fact, he has a book called Chuvat HaTalmidim, which is all about speaking to children, educating children. So I thought, you know, we'll end our shiur, just a sweet quote from the Rebbe. By the way, one more thing. He says he didn't think he would survive the Holocaust. So he wrote in his works, he hid it. He said, if anyone reads my works and learns my Torah, I guarantee I'll be a Melitz Yosher. I will vouch for you in the heavenly chambers. So that's what he says. And if you ever find this, it means there's one Jew left in the world. So give it to a Jew. And so here we are. We found it. An American guy dug it up and we found it. And Rav Shlomo made him famous. And here we are ending with a Torah of Eish Kodesh. So hopefully he'll be a Melitz Yosher to daven for all of Am Yisrael. I don't know where to start. Okay, so let's just a few sweet quotes. Let's start with the following. Memela kolo chaloni tchaber isha da kla Yisrael v'losa min apratia tatzmal nishmat Yisrael ini alachol alot al kodesh baruch hu. If a person is only looking at himself as an individual, but he's not connecting his neshama to klal Yisrael, not learning b'shem ko Yisrael, then you're not able to truly raise yourself up to the highest level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I'm just sitting with my Gemara, I'm steiging, but I'm just not thinking about Am Yisrael. I'm just thinking about me and my Gemara. It's beautiful. It's a mitzvah, but it's not the highest level of Avodas Hashem. I need to think. I need to actually connect myself to all the klal. I never want to take myself out of the klal. I think that this is one of the reasons why I always try to start my shiurim connecting to Klal Yisrael, saying we're doing this same Klal Yisrael. Because you're only a branch. I'm a branch. But a branch is a part of the tree. Right? Birchas Ailonus, right? So if I have to realize I'm part of the tree. That's why it's so important to be at the unity. Only when I get to the higher level of the neshama of Knesset Yisrael, then I can go to a higher level of Kedusha, and I can get higher and higher and higher and higher. And there's no end of the highness I can get to when I am part of the cloud. When I'm learning or davening or doing any mitzvah, it brings light to the whole Jewish people. And when I do tshuva, I have to be aware, I'm bringing, the whole Yisrael is doing tshuva. I sin and say, oh Hashem, I should have, I shouldn't have said Lashon Hara. The whole Jewish people just got a lot of blessing. Right there. We have to believe that. And if I say, I have to be besimcha, the whole Jewish people just got happier. The whole world just got light brought into their world. Sometimes you just feel random happiness. Shlomo asked, why do you feel that random happiness? Because some guy in Alaska was just doing a Rabbi Nachman dance, you know? Mm-hmm. So that we have to know we affect everything. Okay, and he goes on to a little bit more about the Sheni Yodel Yishua, which is a different rabbi. One more quote I highlighted here. We shouldn't be an mahavodazot lachem. What does that mean? Mahavodazot lachem? The Rosh is saying, what's this avoida? But the goal is not that we should be doing avoda, but we should be avadim. Now we should work with holiness. We should become holy. We should be not just be doing the avoda, but we should naturally have a feeling of what's holy and what's not. And even if I'm disconnected, and I'm a little bit in a far from Hashem. If I'm feeling a little bit pain because I came far from Hashem, I didn't have such a good Shemona Esrei. I didn't daven as well as I could. If you feel that, then Hashem is saying you're beautiful. You're on the right track. You feel disconnected. That means you're on the right track. But if you don't feel anything, you don't even feel any regret over those days of Avodas Hashem, then you're feeling disconnected. So even in the times of disconnect from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that itself is a sign that in your heart of hearts you are connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that maybe you might consider yourself a Rasha right now, but in your heart of hearts, in your neshama, you're a tzaddik, and just those bad feelings are holy and worthwhile, and can Bezrat Hashem bring us back to doing tshuva me'ava. So we'll stop with that. We always like to end with a song. We'll sing together one more niggun. And if anyone, after the song, I always like to ask if you took something from the shir that you want to bring into your avodas Hashem for this week, or just something that you want to remember, so then share it with us so you can brainstorm while we're singing. Sounds good? Shukayach. Okay. Diggins coming down.
Did it, I 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 did